The Aussies are slow to get the first, second markers into position. It's a great bomb.
Oh, and Breers has got it. And Breers is going to score. This is unbelievable. What a kick from Harris. He clutched it out of the arms of Darren Lockyer. Wales are celebrating. The try isn't given yet.
Did he go for the ball or the man? That's what they've got to decide now. He finishes up with the ball. This is TRY time.
Our guest on this week's podcast is hard to beat. Yes, he may not quite be Brian Bevan, but he's a true legend, not only of our beloved Wilderspool, but his fame is renowned at the HJ. I'll read you his stats. He played 425 games for the Mighty Wire, scoring 154 tries and 948 goals, thus a total staggering 2,586 points for the Wolves. I'll say that again if you don't quite believe me. 2,586 points for the Wolves. We are privileged to be joined by the magnificent Lee Breers. Lee, welcome to What Would Brian Bevan Say?
Oh, thanks for having us, guys. Looking forward to the show.
Now, we should say, first of all, Lee, you are sporting an amazing beard there, mate. I mean, it's how many colours have you got? And that's like it's like the rainbow.
Yeah, I've got a bit of black, brown, ginger and grey. I wish it was all grey, to be fair. The ginger does me head in.
Sam had a ginger moustache last week. We made him shave it off.
But you can't have a Hitler moustache on a show nowadays, can you? Because that's what it was like.
Jeez.
Now, before we move on to your career, mate, and all those wonderful things you did at The Wire, and also your coaching career, I've noticed this week amongst the media, you've been out helping the NHS and the vulnerable people of St Helens delivering food parcels.
Yeah, so obviously when all this happened and, you know, the I suppose how it come about was, you know, people being greedy in supermarkets, you know, everybody going and, you know, getting all the food and the toilet rolls and whatnot. And the NHS staff and the frontline workers weren't getting what they needed because obviously they're at work. So I've got a very good friend of mine, Andrew McCallu of McCall Hotel and Leisure Group. He's got a few restaurants, few bars, few hotels. So basically what he did was he turned his pub stroke restaurant into a shopping centre, shopping market. And, you know, he got loads of quality food in and decided that he would kind of sell this to the NHS, the frontline workers who could get there, you know, and it was only available to them. And with that, the SPF joined in and they've kind of took over it. And also, I must say, Blackbrook Rugby League Club had also, they'd set up a phone line prior to this, so they were just delivering on their own anyway. So yeah, it all merged and become one. And so obviously being a Steve Prescott ambassador, I thought, you know, I'll go and go and help and make sure that, you know, people, the vulnerable people of our community get looked after. And also, it, you know, it gets me out of the office as well. So yeah, it's great. I've been to places in St. Helens where I've never been. So it's interesting, and it's all done in the right manner. There's no profit being made. There's a bit of donation going to the SPF, obviously because it's a charity and we need to keep the SPF alive. But it's done from, you know, good-hearted people to go out, use their own petrol money, and make sure that, you know, people at St. Helens are safe.
And you've had Johnny Vegas out doing it as well, I think, haven't you, in a few of the pictures I've seen?
Johnny's literally done every single day. He's been an absolute star. And, you know, with his profile, it's just gone through the roof. Obviously, he messaged Russell Crowe. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah.
He messaged Russell Crowe. Russell Crowe did a Twitter video. And I think, off the top of my head, it was nearly 4 million people seeing that. So it's just amazing. Everybody's clubbing together. You know, you've got like Paul Scott, Tommy Marsh, and then the Blackbrook Rugby League Club have been fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
So it's been non-stop. Now, what's your distribution like, Lee? Is it very similar to when you were playing a halfback? What you're sort of trying to get going here? Have you got the team working around you?
Well, Well, yeah, you've got to, actually, Tommy Martin and myself, I mentioned the other day, Tommy, we were putting some boxes in the back of the pub, and obviously there was two, it's hard to explain, there's two gates, back gates, which was quite narrow, and it was a bit hectic getting through, so Tommy was just leaving them at the door while we'd get them, so he was organising the forwards and we were getting it, I said. But yeah, it's hectic, I've not dropped any yet, Johnny's dropped a few eggs.
Tommy Martin's always got that dummy move, hasn't he? Remember that move he used to do down the wing where he pretended to pass it to his winger coming on the inside and he'd carry on down that touchline and scoring the corner. Cheeky, wasn't he? Cheeky with the ball.
Yeah, he had one of the best dummies ever. he was unbelievable, Tommy.
So you're a St Helens lad through and through. That's where you were born and bred. Take us back to when rugby league started for you, Lee. Where was that? When was it?
Well, obviously, coming from St Helens, rugby league was always something what I was going to get into. And where we lived in St Helens, mum and dad still lived there. It was about 100 metres away from Knowsley Road. So I first remember going to Knowsley Road around about 1982. I was 4 years of age and fell in love with the game then. The way we got into the Saints ground was literally, I used to walk up with my dad. We used to climb over before the game started. Or we used to wait till half-time and when they used to let the... You know, the people who couldn't afford to at half time, the gates open, we used to get in at that time. In the meantime, there was a rugby club that just started in 1982. It was called St. Helens Crusaders. And believe it or not, we used to train on Knowsley Road, the front pitch, because we had no ground. We was a new team.
Yeah.
The pitch at the front, that's where that was our training base, St. Helens Crusaders. There was only one team that started. In 1982, I was 4 years of age. I was a bit of a tearaway, so, you know, I wasn't old enough to play at under nines. But I used to go to every training session, probably being a bit of a nuisance, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Because where we lived in the cul-de-sac, there was quite a few young kids who were around about 7, 8 years of age. So they all went and played. Obviously, I wanted to be with them and joined in. And most of the time, mum and dad didn't know where. Actually, I've got a photo of, and somebody sent me a photo while we've been in lockdown of the very first photo. And I'm literally... That big, that smaller than everybody else. And I was 4 years of age under 19, and I'm just at the back, just popping my head up. And that was on Knowsley Road Fields. Mum and Dad probably didn't know. Well, definitely knew I worked there. So that was my love of rugby league. And I remember the very first game for the team was, we played at St Williams. That team played, and I just went along to again be a nuisance. I think I used to collect the balls and stuff, and I remember I actually played in the game. They put me on with about five, six minutes to go. I was 4 years of age, probably didn't have a kit, but I remember playing on. I got put right on the wing, and we got beat 92-0 that game. I missed a few tackles then, and it followed me all the way through my career.
Probably at that time, though, in St Helens, I mean, well, you know, you're probably smoking 10 fags a day and a pint, you know, a tin of Stella at that age, weren't you?
No, not at that age. That was the following year.
Right.
It weren't Stella, it was Skull.
Quite specific as well.
Yeah.
And you're climbing over the fence, Leo, you're going in at half time. Who were the first players you remember then at Saints?
Oh, you know, Mal Meninga, I remember he come. A couple of years later, Phil Vivas. But I love Phil Vivas. He was one of my heroes. Harry Pinner at the time was an unbelievable ball player. Neil Olden, I loved them types of players. And they were all local St. Helens lads. And Harry was at Warrington, lives in Warrington. Neil was St. Helens, Graham Littrop. Obviously, Phil Vivas, Australia. But I just love that era.
I remember watching Neil Holden at Knowsley Road. I've never seen a scrum half look like he'd been shot. He used to kick that ball over the top and no one would be within a metre of him and he'd just fall on his back as if he was dead. I mean, he wouldn't get away with that now in Super League with all the cameras, etc. He was an actor, not just a rugby league player, but he was an actor the way he went about it and gaining those penalties for Saints.
Well, it's funny you should say that because he's a really good after-dinner speaker. He's a compo as well, and you can see that in him.
Yeah,
but he was quick. I always remember socks around his ankles.
Off he went.
Yeah,
and so Roy Haggerty, another one. He'd have been in that side, wouldn't he? He ran about that space.
Yeah. Loved him, socks down, and he used to, you know, old-fashioned tough back rower. you know, run really, his legs really fast, but really short strides. Yeah, he was awesome.
I'm not sure if it's true, but I think he sat next to the wonderful Mike Gregory on a tour down to Australia, and they had to fill out the quarantine forms, and he filled it out as Mike Gregory because he just copied Mike Gregory, who was sitting next to him.
Yeah, Roy was like, God bless his soul. He passed away a couple of years ago. You know, he was a wonderful character in St. Helens.
All these great players. And then, of course, you had the Cat, didn't you? He was a little bit later, sort of took over from Roy Haggerty, didn't he, that second row forward? Can't remember his name now. What was his name?
Paul Thorber.
Had the back problems, didn't he, eventually? Or neck issues. Paul Thorber.
Well, funny enough, his brother Gary is probably one of in my top three best mates.
Right.
My missus runs a business for him. So we're quite close, us and the Forbes, you know.
This doesn't sound like St. Helens at all, Lee, everyone knowing each other.
Yeah, I know, yeah. So we play golf a lot, me and Gary together, and good family, real good, you know, working class family.
Well, Paul Thorber, he was a big lad, he was a good second row forward.
He was.
Now, I'm also told that possibly you used to sneak into the cafeteria, Lee, occasionally to whip a few supplies up for your mum. So it's not just the NHS you've been working for.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously, St. Knowsley Road Ground was on my doorstep. I love rugby league. So what better place to go and, you know, use as your playground? So every night in Knowsley Road Ground, kicking goals, playing hide and seek. How good is that? A big stadium. How many hiding places can you have with your mates? Climbing the old rafters, so climbing on the roof.
No security guards.
No security guards in them days. No. You know, it was fantastic. It was an amazing place, and obviously you had the old, you know, snack bars, what you used to call them. You used to go and get a coffee and stuff, and you know, you used to get rob all the coffee there and take them home to mum and dad and sugar and stuff. I got caught once. I suppose this is why I become very good friends with, you know, like to Paul Loughlin, Phil Vivas, Bernard Dwyer, because they all used to work. They used to always work on the stadium, you know, making sure it's painted, groundsman, all that. And in the school holidays, I used to, you know, throw bricks at them, and they used to give me a good chase. So they never forget that. They never let me forget it either.
My brother worked at Pilkington's for years, and when he started working at Pilks, would have been probably in the late 80s. Everyone used to go and watch St. Helens on a Sunday and clock on at Pilkington's before they went in to watch the match and get paid for it, and then clock out of Pilks after they left. It was all happening there.
Well, yeah, you've got to get by somehow, haven't you?
So you make your way through as a junior playing rugby league in St. Helens late. When did sort of St. Helens, when did they sort of catch your eye? When did they think, oh, this lad's got talent?
You know, I was pretty late signing. I was very small. I had, you know, I based my game around skills, but I don't know what it is with rugby league. Generally, especially now, it's a big guy what always gets picked up. So I went on tour to Australia under 15s with Northwest Counties. And out of that tour, it was kind of the time where a lot of rugby league, professional rugby league clubs were signing kids at early age and giving them a lot of money. Right. And on that tour, there was 30 players out of 36, I think there was, who had signed professional contracts. I was one of the six who hadn't and went on that tour. And if I'm being brutally honest, that's the first time I ever thought about, you know, about making it professional when I was in that squad, when you've got so many people signing. But I didn't even know you could get paid for playing rugby league. I just loved to play. So I went on that tour, and obviously you hear all these things about how much money people got and signed for different clubs and whatnot. And I was second choice halfback on the tour. The guy called Paul George from Widnes. He signed for Wigan. He was a gun at the time. But we went on tour and we played two games and we didn't win. And then the third game, I got put in the first team. I was playing in the second team. I got put in the first team. It was at Rockhampton. And we were drawing 30-all, and over there they had the siren for the end of the game, not a whistle. And literally, as I hit a drop goal, the siren went and I hit it from about 30 metres out. And that was probably the start of the turn of my career, and got a lot of confidence from that. I actually, good story from that. Do you remember the London Broncos and Melbourne Storm centre, Tony Martin?
Yeah.
Well, actually, he was playing for Rockhampton. I billeted with him, so I stayed with him and his family.
Right. So this is pre, obviously, in playing rugby league, professional rugby league. He's a young lad at this stage, is he?
Yeah, same age. We were only 15 together.
Yeah.
And billeted in Rockhampton with him. And then when we come home, and as obviously signed professional with Saints, he then went and signed professional with London Broncos. Yeah. So we played against each other again in the academy. So it's a bit weird how it happened. But going back to that, yeah, come home from that tour, and I was lucky enough that I played in a game, a town team game. I love the town team games. We must try to get them back in our junior setups. I think that's the way forward. But we were playing Wigan, St. Helens against Wigan, under 16s Lancashire Cup final at Knowsley Road. And, you know, I was lucky enough to have a really good game that game and got man of the match. And the scout of the time, Kevin Crean, came to me after the game and said, "Listen, Lee, we want to sign you. We want to meet with your mum and dad, and you know, we want you to sign for St. Helens." So, wow, you can imagine how excited I was at that. You know, I think I went to the bowling green and necked a couple of bottles of cider after that.
Was the sheer panic in the house, Lee? Were you hiding all the coffee and all the sugar you'd pinched from Knowsley Road?
Yeah, you know, if only then you. So went home, told mum and dad, and had a meeting up at Saints. And now I would have signed for nothing for Saints. Well, tell you what, I basically did. They gave me £1,000 and two season tickets. Bearing in mind,
you could get over the wall
anyway, so I didn't need the season ticket. and that was the start of it. That was the very, very start of it there and then.
So then you're sort of playing in that, well, I presume it was the reserve grade team at the time. Was it the A team? Was it known as by then?
It was actually the academy side I played. I played in the academy side at 16.
Yeah.
And we went on to win it that year. It was the time when you used to play at Old Trafford before the Premiership final.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And we had some great players in that team. Kieran Cunningham, Danny Arnold, Joey Ayres, you know, John McAtee. The list went on. And I ended up breaking in and playing in that final, which was really good. And then I played another academy at 17. And then me that third year, I moved up to reserves. And I got named as a reserves captain, the A team captain for that year. And it was unbelievable. I had to captain the academy the year before. And then Mike Gregory, who was a coach, he made me captain of the A team. But I never actually made an appearance for the A team because obviously Bobby Golding got suspended and I went into the first team. So I went from academy to first team.
So you play those six games while Bobby Goulding suspended leading up to that Challenge Cup final. I remember watching you back then, Lee. I mean, how much did you weigh when you were kicking those goals during those six games? I mean, how much were you weighing back then?
I was just over 72 kilos.
Gee.
Yeah, Wikipedia's got you down as 13 stone, but that was obviously when you finished playing.
Yeah, I was around about 13 stone, 4 when in the back end of my career. That's the heaviest I've been. But yeah, very small. But when you're playing in that team, you don't need make tackles; people make them for you. But yeah, remember it vivid. Well, remember it like it was yesterday when Bobby Golding smashed Neil Cowie around the head and got sent off, and I was, you know, cheering, because I was obviously Saints player, Saints fans on the touchline.
Yeah.
Just as a supporter.
Yeah.
Going crazy and never, ever in my wildest dreams thinking that actually that moment on that rugby field right there was going to change my life forever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the Challenge Cup final comes around. Did you think your name was nailed on? Did you know Bobby was coming back into that team, or did you think you'd done enough and you'd keep your place?
No, obviously I knew Bobby was going to come back into the team. I wasn't silly, and I wasn't, you know, getting ahead of myself. Bobby Golden was the best scrum half in the country, if not one of the best in the world at the time. He was club captain.
Yeah.
Bobby was an unbelievable mentor to me. You know, he used to, on his days off, we used to go in and do some extra kicking, goal kicking in, and he used to always bring me in. I wasn't full-time at Saints. I was only part-time, but he used to bring me in on days off and look after me. And, you know, I knew for St. Helens to win the Challenge Cup final, Bobby Golden had to be in that team. What actually happened was why I ended up moving was nothing to do with Bobby Golden. And people think that it was. And me and Bobby are great mates. And like I said, for St. Helens to win that final, Bobby Goulding had to be in. Simple as that. He was the best player. So I was just unbelievably grateful that I played in them six games, and now I could go back to playing reserves. And, you know, if it happened again, I know that I could go in. But about a month out from the final, obviously, it takes a lot to organise a Wembley week. You've got your suits and whatnot. You trip down there to hotels and stuff like that. And so we had a meeting with the directors, and it was about a month before, and it transpired that, you know, I wasn't going to go down with the team on the Thursday to the hotel and, you know, to walk around Wembley and stay in the hotel and get a new suit. And I was just going to go with the academy on the Saturday morning, which I thought was a bit wrong for what I'd done. And, you know, I was gutted because the only suit I had was a school suit. So I wanted a suit on my court, the one where I used to get caught in. No, joking aside. Well, I was a bit gutted by that. And, you know, good friend, Chris Joint, obviously, he stood up and backed me to the hill, and he said, it's disgraceful that, you know, he's done this and it's the least he could do. And, you know, I walked out of that meeting and I was gutted. I was absolutely gutted.
I mean, at 72 kilos, like, I mean, somebody could have put you in a suitcase, couldn't they?
Well, exactly. I was good at being naughty, so I probably could have made my own way down there. But, you know, I walked out of that meeting, and by no means ever did it ever once cross my mind that I would ever leave St. Helens, ever. Right. Not now, but ever. I was St. Helens through and through. It was, like I said, Knowsley was my church. That's where I went and just did what I wanted to do. But it was weird how it happened a day later. And I don't know how they got my phone number, because we'd only had a phone in the house a month.
I was just going to say, Lee, you had no agent then. There was no agents back then.
So this is the next thing. So in my house, Mum and Dad didn't have a phone. We didn't have a phone. We couldn't afford a phone. So just when I signed for Saints and I'd made a bit of money in that run in the Challenge Cup, I said, right, I'm going to buy you a phone and I'll pay for everything. And that was the start. But so a month later, when this meeting's happened, the day after, I got a phone call from an agent who was Tommy Cunningham, who was Kieran Cunningham's brother.
Right.
And he said, listen, Lee, I'm Tommy. I want to meet up with you. I want to be your agent. And what do you think about Warrington, going to Warrington? They've come in for you. And I went, yeah, I'll meet up with you and we'll have a chat. And I was still stinging, obviously, from that. So we met up and he explained to me that Daryl van der Velde wanted to sign me. Alex Murphy as well, who, by the way, was my dad's hero, so that probably got it across the line. And again, if the phone call probably happened probably a week later, I probably wouldn't have gone to Warrington, but I was still a bit pissed about what had happened.
Yeah.
Probably a bit naive and a bit immature, and not, like, probably sat down and thought about it and just gone, well, as my book says, off the cuff, so I just thought, balls to it.
Basically on the rebound, wasn't it, I suppose?
Yeah,
coming out of that meeting and on the rebound, well, I'll show you.
Yeah, basically, so, yeah, that's how it was.
Well, what you're saying there, Sam, is basically that he's had a very nice girlfriend and then he's gone on the rebound to an absolute slapper, and that slapper's Warrington.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, if you used to go at half-time under the scoreboards for a piss at Warrington, you used to realise you were ankle-deep in it.
Ain't wrong with that. It's character building.
So you arrive at Wilderspool, Lee. Well, how old are you by the time? It's 97, is it, you arrive at Wilderspool?
Yeah, just 18.
Was there a big contrast between the two teams? I mean, you've come out of that great Saints team and you've arrived at a bit of a higgledy-piggledy Warrington side. Did you notice it straight off that something was different?
Obviously, I'm coming from a championship winning side, you know. Yeah. And we're from 1 to 17 of internationals. So there's going to be a difference. My first training session was, you know, Warren Stevens didn't know his left from right. So I've just...
Warren Stevens, yes, I remember him.
He was quite a good player.
I just come from a training field 3 days prior, playing with Apollo Perolini, Kieran Cunningham, Julian O'Neill, you know, Chris Joint.
Yeah.
Tommy Martin, Bobby Goldie, Steve Prescott, Alan Hunt, Carl Hammond, Paul Newlove, the list goes on, Anthony Sullivan, and then somebody don't know the left to right. What do you reckon the difference was?
To be fair, you're not passing him the ball much, are you, Lee, really, to be honest?
No, but when I'm calling, we used to call 70 left or 70 right, and I didn't know which way it was. That was a bit of a tough one. Do you know what? Joking apart, and I watched a video of Warren the other day. He was playing Castleford just before I arrived in that season, and he passed the ball as a front rower to Nigel Vergara, who went through at Cass. Now, yeah. I'll tell you this, that pass was a world-class pass, and Warren could do that. Yeah. Absolutely could do it. He was a prop before his time. If he's in today's game, he'd be a superstar with the right coaching around him.
Yeah. I mean, you don't see that as much. I mean, I remember Warrington had Roland Phillips, which was probably before that as well. He always used to try and pass the ball out, didn't he? The lad they brought up from South Wales. But Warren Stephen was a pretty handy player, I thought, at times. He just didn't quite go on as far as you thought he might.
No, you're right. You're right. And that was probably... there's numerous things around that. But he was a classy player, Warren. Let's not forget, he was 17, 18.
Yeah.
And playing front row with the top guys.
Kind of goes back to what you were saying before. There was that academy way through, wasn't there, back then almost? Yeah. It bled into that first team a little bit easier. So you arrive at Wolfsburg 97. Who stands out?
Obviously, Paul Sculthorpe. But I knew that already because I played all my amateur career with Paul. And actually, Paul was one of the massive reasons why I signed for Warrington, for him only to go and sign for Saints 3 months later. Thank you. obviously, I played with Kelly Shelford. Was unbelievable on the ball. Yeah. So laid back, it was untrue. Nigel Vergara.
Yeah.
Toi Coilove. The list is endless. It was a solid squad.
On the podcast, we have a section on tackle bags, right? We've asked this question before, but did Daryl van der Velde get you on the tackle bags, Lee, when you arrived?
He tried. Oh. Yeah. Daryl was well renowned for his tackle bags. I remember once, do you know the one the World Club Challenge was on, and we had to play Penrith, Cronulla and New Zealand Warriors? And when we played them at home, for every point they scored on the Sunday, on the Monday we used to have to hit a bag. So that's the day after. Get the tackle bags out at Wilderspool. And so we got beat by 60-odd points in some of them games.
That's a lot of tackle bags.
And this was not six tackles and then have a rest. This was consecutive. And if you didn't make the line, so if your foot didn't hit that line, and it didn't matter if you was on 40-odd tackles, you're going again. It was just, he loved tackle bags. Absolutely loved them.
Yeah. Did you notice that
he actually come up with a really good? It could have been really good if he got it off the ground. Suppose if he had a dragon's den, it was like. I suppose it was like what the NFL.
Oh look, he's got his book out.
Yeah, I like it. The NFL.
Keep going.
It's got like a moving platform, and the bag hung down. You hit it, pushed it back, and then somebody else would come and just keep hitting for leg drive. Suppose it was good.
Fucking brilliant. I'm having that one.
It's a bit like Sonic the Hedgehog, that.
But yeah, Daryl was, he loved his tackle bags.
And those games, Lee, against those overseas teams, it was almost a little bit embarrassing, some of those scorelines. I remember watching Cronulla come out to play Warrington, and apart from the half time when the bloke did the streak down the field and the police tried to catch him, and I think it was Chaddy threw him a water bottle and did another lap. They were big lads at Cronulla. Their backs look bigger than our forwards in some regard. Have you noticed a difference as time's gone on in rugby league? That difference between an Australian player of the mid-80s in comparison to 2020 has changed. We've all sort of caught up in many regards.
I'm not sure. No, I think they're bigger than ever now.
Yeah.
And I guess it's because whereas they have a choice of so many players, They're bound to have the bigger athlete, where we tend to soccer has the bigger athlete here, but they don't lift as many weights. So the frame of the soccer player lifting rugby league weights would be the same as Australian. especially with their outside backs. They've got some big outside backs. But you know what? Size isn't everything. It honestly, it does my head in when people go on about how big people are. Well, you know what? Move them about, because big players struggle moving about. So, you know, you've got to attack them from different angles. And like my dad says, they can't run without the, should say head really, shouldn't it? But no, legs.
Well, you certainly saw a few coaches at Warrington through the years, Lee. I mean, you had Darrell Vandeveld, then there was Anderson and Plange, Paul Cullen, obviously, and James Lowes before Tony Smith came in. Did you take something from each of those coaches? Was there a positive note to be taken from all those coaches, and also possibly a negative one as well?
Of course, yeah. You've got to learn from everything, especially when you look back. And if that's something you want to get into, you've got to take the good and the bad. And, you know, for Darrell Vandeveld was ahead of his time in coaching-wise. You know, the stuff he knew about rugby league was what people know now. And, you know, he was saying the same thing 25 years ago. Yeah, I really liked Darrell. Really, really, really liked Darrell. He was, it could be tough when he needed to be, but, you know, he got the boys playing for him. Then obviously Steve Anderson come in and David Plange. Probably this is where I take negative stuff and not how to do it. Not Plange, I like Plange. Plange was actually a decent coach, but Steve Anderson was useless.
Now, didn't Steve put you at fullback?
Yeah, put me at fullback. And then I think he moved me to six when it was going tits up. But I think the rot had already set in. Just for instance, you know, and believe it or not, I did have a complaint. I did have a moan. We didn't really do any fitness in pre-season. Now, we would have thought that I'd moan about that. There was no fitness involved. It was just passing and these stupid lines. And I remember when you know, I think we lost the first few games and somebody said about the Challenge Cup, and I think it was a Warrington guy, and he said, we won't be peaking for the Challenge Cup. We'll be peaking for round 10, and he didn't make it that far.
This seems to be a running theme through the players at Warrington, that this is the one thing you've taken away from Anderson, is this peaking that he never got to at the time.
Yeah, it was weird. Literally, he bought, or should I say, he recruited a championship squad to play in Super League.
A classic case of players just not being behind the coach because you didn't have a respect or a belief in him.
No, I totally think it was down to recruitment. He recruited a championship squad to play in Super League. We need in the championship, to be fair, didn't we?
And at this point, Lee, are you on a long contract? I mean, is there sort of a thing, well, I might get out of this and go somewhere else? Did anyone come in and offer you anything?
Yeah, I nearly signed for Widnes around that time. I said nearly. It probably crossed my mind for a second. No disrespect to Widnes, because it's not about Widnes. I never, ever wanted to leave Warrington. Yeah. Ever.
Yeah. And then Paul Cullen comes in and things change. I mean...
Yeah, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
I mean, at one point, it looked like you were going down, and he came in, and somehow this momentum suddenly appeared, that you started winning games and there was a pride back in the side. And I'm not sure if the players changed, but something changed.
Yeah, we got a few better players in. Remember, we signed Benny Westwood and Nathan Wood.
Wood,
I think, around that time. So it brought a bit of stability back into us, and lacking on confidence, he put the confidence back into us. And Cole, without a shadow of a doubt, was exactly what we needed at that time. You know, he built the foundation to what the club are on now, without a shadow of a doubt.
And of course, Nathan Wood and Benny Westwood came in. I mean, Ben Westwood was a centre, wasn't he, when he signed from Wakefield? I think that's where they slotted him in originally. Nate Wood came into the team, a whole heap of sort of tenaciousness in his approach to a game. He was tough, and he was a great player to, I presume, have alongside.
Oh, geez. You know, when you went into battle with Nathan Wood, that he's got your back. And for somebody who was as frightened as me playing rugby league, that's a massive confidence booster.
I was going to say. So he's watching out for you the whole time.
Yeah, he was. Geez, he could throw punches like you. I remember him knocking Craig Smith out the Wigan, the big Wigan prop.
Yeah.
He hit him that many times. He even put his fist up, Craig Smith. And another one was Jimmy Laws. He straightened Jimmy Laws. He's just... And you know what? Nathan's missus wasn't as bad a fighter either. They used to knock people out for fun, didn't they?
They live near you, Rob, don't they?
I saw Nathan Wood down near the netball courts. I coached a netball team, and he was down near the courts a few weeks ago. And boy, he's a big lad now. I don't mean fat. He's beefed up as well. He could easily play second row now.
Yeah, he's coming. He's coming over in, I think it's October, to fight against Brendan Tutor for Rob Burrow. So I'm in his corner.
Oh,
I'm in his corner.
Brendan Tutor was another one we had, wasn't he?
Yeah, I play with Brendan. Two solid blokes. I hope he don't get cut because I'm scared of blood.
So what happened to Cull in the end, Lee? I mean, what was the end? What was the demise of Paul?
I just think that it come to the end of, you know, how much he could take the club, which is not a bad thing. From where we started to where we finished was unbelievable. You know, let's not forget the transition to going into the Aliwell Jones. You know, in that period, we had Andrew Jones playing. You know, signed Matt King, signed Louis Anderson, signed Mike Monaghan. He signed all these players, let's not forget.
Yeah.
But we just come, I reckon it just, the life had run. And sometimes that happens in not just sport, but in business, in life, in relationships. It happens. But what a period of time. I always thank Cole because he was just unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. I suppose that's why I care so much about Warrington, because of what Paul taught me.
Hmm. He did a lovely job on our next door neighbour's upholstery on the settee as well, because he was an upholsterer, wasn't he, originally by trade? Absolutely beautiful job he did, yeah, next door but one. Happy days.
I do believe that when we become the Wolves, it was Paul's idea, wasn't it?
I think he designed one of the tops, didn't he?
One of the benches with the wire around the back. Around it, yeah, it was like a diamond badge, wasn't it? A diamond shape with a wolf's head in the middle.
Yeah.
Well, talking of badges, then we'll have a little quiz for you now, Lee. You played under numerous different sponsors that were across the Primrose and Blue shirt.
Okay.
Can you tell us the first one that was on your top when you played your first game for Wire? Who it was?
Greenalls.
It was indeed. For 10 years, Greenalls were the sponsor at Warrington. After Greenalls. Between 2001 and 2004.
Oh, good. Oh. It was another make of the kit.
I didn't even know who these were, actually. This is new to me. I must have missed this one.
It was a kit at kit. It's a good one, this.
You know, Sam, you're looking like you do.
No. Well, I thought I did, but not if Rob said he didn't know who it was, because I was going to say we moved from Greenalls to Tetley's because Tetley's took Greenalls over.
Tetley's.
Well, I don't think Tetley's was ever the main one on the shirt.
All right.
There was always
we had a rugby ball with Tetley's across it.
Yeah, I've got a shirt upstairs. There's been numerous other sponsors that have had logos on the shirts or have been the shirt manufacturer, but they've not been the main sponsor. It was Miller Homes.
Okay.
So then from 2005 to 2009. You see, the thing with Lee is he's too busy looking out in front of him what's going on the play and not looking at his shirt.
I think was he not looking at Google on his phone? You're cheating.
No. 2005 to 2009 was Amiga.
Amiga.
Okay. And then just for 1 year in 2010, starting with V. No, they were in they were the year after. It was Vestas.
Vestas. The regenerative power thing, wasn't it?
And then I think this was your last year, Lee. Was it 2013 you retired? Did you play any footy in 2013?
Yeah.
Okay, there was one before Emirates, just for a year. It was Brookson.
Brookson.
So I presume with all these sponsors, Lee, you weren't getting many perks by the sounds of it. There weren't crates of ale coming around to your house or whatever Benson and Beds offer. Queen Beds?
Oh, no. Do you know what? No. It's a shame that, really, isn't it?
Oh, dear.
Right. And you were making a lot out of robbing the canteen at Warrington by this time, because it must have been far more lucrative than Saints. What's the catering like at Warrington Lee? Because it's an ongoing thing. I've been to a few of the in the press box a few times, but I never actually end up going for dinner or eating there.
So the question is,
yeah.
So you want the catering? Or do you want an invite? Is that what you're saying?
No. I don't want an invite. I've had one. The thing is, Sam always offers me a drink, so I end up going with him.
So you ask this. So why don't you go? You've had an invite.
It's in the pub. I'm getting pissed.
We're doing pre-work for the podcast before.
That's what it is.
So I'll tell you what, you keep asking this question. Why don't you come and try it for yourself?
I know, I should do. I just want the opinion first. You know, I feel like, you know,
it's the best food I've ever tasted. Do you want to come as my guest one day?
Oh, there you go. You see, you're laughing.
Yeah, okay, I'll do that. And will you be serving?
Possibly. If you put a donation to charity, I'll definitely serve.
Oh, okay then. Okay, I'll get the copper jar out now.
He's too busy holding Steve Price down up there in the gantry.
Yeah.
We've noticed you become his carer, Lee, a little bit. You sort of have to keep calming him down and tell him it's not quite over yet, Steve.
Well, that's my job. He's allowed to get animated, and my job is to keep him calm, which is what an assistant's got to do. One thing for sure is he's passionate. He's passionate.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, we'll move on then to Tony Smith before we come on to Steve. That's kind of where it all kind of changed for a while, wasn't it? That's when all of a sudden silverware started to appear. In that very first year, you went on and won the Challenge Cup. What was the difference? Tony came in and what changed?
Well, you know what? Was we that far off if Paul Cullen had carried on? I don't know. We'd had the same players, the same team, more or less. Obviously, Tony coming in, the one thing I'd say about Tony is that he was a successful coach and knew how to win the big games, which is an art. If you're not been there and done it, it's an art to do. And so he was unbelievable at that. He was unbelievable about understanding big game mentality. He challenged everybody every single day, every minute of every day. You got challenged, which is Tony's. It's his biggest strength is, you know. He makes sure that you are on every day.
Was it clear that the club wanted Tony Smith rather than Jimmy Lowe's? And when I think he came as can't remember his title, but he originally was going to come as director of coaching or something like that. Was it clear that he was a boss right from day one?
When he come in, yeah, he was the boss. I think Jimmy took over the year previous.
Paul went halfway through, didn't he?
Yeah, and then obviously Tony come in. We didn't know that he was coming in. He kind of lifted everybody when he did, obviously from his track record, and then Jimmy become assistant coach. Tony was a coach. I think this director of rugby director coach is just a name.
That's what I mean. It was sold.
Yeah, no, Tony was head coach.
Mm. And did he drop you, Lee? Do I remember rightly, Tony?
Oh, yeah.
He dropped you early on, did he? What kind of was that about? What was the reasoning behind that?
Well, you know, it's now that I can look back and review it as a coach, it was a great way to do it. Whether he did it tactically or whether it was done, you know, for that response. But we played away at London and got beat 70-odd. I think, and that week I wasn't good enough. I was not good enough. But Tony had to come and make a statement. And you know, who would have thought that going on reputations that Lee Breeze could have ever got dropped? And that week he come and he dropped me and he said, "You need to fight your way back into the team." So not only did it piss me off, what it did to the other players around me was, oh shit! If he can get dropped, so can I. I need to buck up. So what a great, it was, you know, it was a fantastic move. And he didn't drop me after that, let me tell you.
Interesting you say that, because again, from a fan's perspective, one of his earliest moves was to swap out Martin Gleeson and bring in Richie Mathers. And from a fan's perspective, you're losing an international centre and bringing in someone who's more of a team player. Was that a statement to the squad as well, that he didn't want individuals, maybe.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what? The team is always stronger than the individual. And, you know, Richie coming in, let's not be about the bus. Me and Gleese were probably the best halfback, right-sided Purden in the league. We were unstoppable on some occasion because Martin was that good. Martin was unbelievable. And then to let him go and bring Rich in, it could have been a massive shock to everybody around. But, you know, Tony knew what he was doing. He knows what it takes to win, you know, cup finals, and you need a solid team. And what a great move bringing Richie Mathers in, by the way. He was sensational, absolutely sensational.
So if that's the case, then, Lee, that sort of having that mentality, are you willing to adopt that a similar thing in the current day, that, you know, you would look at a player and say, actually, you're dropped regardless of reputation?
1,000,000%. Without even an ounce of thought about it.
Yeah.
The team hall always comes before the individual.
Well, okay. You went on to win 3 Challenge Cups under Tony Smith in 2009, 2010 and 2012. You won the Lance Todd Trophy in 2010. What a team that was, Lee. I mean, I went through the team sheet today and you look at the stars in that team and the ability. It was a brilliant team, absolutely brilliant side.
Oh, wow. I've got goosebumps just thinking about it. But there's a sentence what you said there. It was full of stars, which it was. But let me tell you, there was not one ego. Not one ego.
You all worked hard for each other.
Everybody wanted to work hard for each other. Now, everybody did it differently. You know, there'd be people who'd be working as hard as they can in the gym, working hard as they can running, working hard as they can, probably looking at video. But we all worked hard and we pulled in the right direction. It was just fantastic. And when you've got a leader of the ilk of Adrian Morley, well, it's not hard to follow, is it?
No, not at all. Do you notice a big difference on that Wembley pitch? I mean, is it made for ball players? I mean, we've seen some amazing tries at Wembley over the years. Is it different than playing up north on a slightly longer bladed grass?
No, it's exactly the same. This is the perception of Wembley, that it's a bigger pitch, it's a faster pitch.
It's the same size as ours, isn't it?
It's exactly the same. What the difference is, and I think this is what got Saints this year when we played them, is Wembley, it's the emotion. So generally, it's, you know, obviously it's a bigger game, so you're going to be thinking more nervously about it.
Yeah.
Generally, the heat gets you, and, you know, the crowd, so the crowd generates heat. So it's about 8 to 10 degrees hotter at ground level because of the crowd. So if you put all them into a bowl and stir them, there's going to be some nervous energy and fatigue.
Yeah.
And you know, Saints had, I think, 4 or 5 players who didn't play for about 5 or 6 weeks before that.
Yeah.
And we knew that. You know, we just, you know, ground them down. But we you've got to embrace Wembley. You've got to absolutely embrace it. And we had a really good week leading up to it. We were nice and calm, relaxed, the underdog. Probably a lot different to the year before when we got beat at Catlands, because the pressure was on us. I remember we was warming up beforehand, and obviously at Wembley there's a bits of the field what are under shadow and the rest are in the sunshine. The year before, what we did, we warmed up. We changed our warm-up and warmed up in the shadow. And this year, the lads went, well, we'll do this. I said, nah. I said, we're warming up wherever we warm up on a normal day. That's in the sun, so be it. We're attacking it. Now, Saints were the opposite. They did what we did, trying to hide from it instead of embracing it and just going bang. And it is. It's not the size of the field. There's kind of a motto, what you say is, don't play the occasion, play the game. Because if you start playing the occasion and thinking what's going to happen when you look at trouble.
Surely that statement's too much for Warren Stevens, and he doesn't know his left from his right. That's got me on that one, Lee.
Yeah, so in playing the occasion is, you know, you're looking for your family when you're coming out and playing at Wembley. It's going to be a massive crowd. Hey, guess what? If we win, we're going to be on a certain amount of money. We're going to go on a big party. So you're playing the occasion instead of all them things might not ever happen if you don't win. Yeah, hell, they're not going to happen if you don't win. So it's all about going and playing. Be in the moment.
Yeah.
Be in the moment. Don't worry about your families in the stand. Worry, worry for a job. And there's a lot of games are won in the tunnel beforehand.
Yeah.
And you can tell what the opposite side are saying. Now, I live in St. Helens, so I know quite a bit what goes on in St. Helens. Now, when they're when the opposition team are putting pictures in the paper of the new suits and team photo of the new suits, what are they thinking?
Right. It's all about the occasion, isn't it?
Correct. And there's a bus route. What bus route they're taking.
Right. So they've already planned it. It's all there.
They've already planned it.
So painted the bus.
We're thinking about other things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in years gone by, I remember reading, I think it was Paul Vorton saying when he played for St. Helens, the year they lost to Wigan, and Hanley had an absolute blinder that afternoon.
27-0.
Saints had been to the races the day before and stood on their feet all afternoon. They were all, you know, they had nothing left in their legs by the time they got to Wembley the next day.
Wembley legs, isn't it? It just saps your legs.
I've seen you kick some amazing balls across field, Lee. You seem to just pinpoint, you know, I don't know if it's like lofting a nine iron onto the onto the green. If there was one player that you could have out on that edge that you want to kick to and think he's the lad who's going to catch it more often than not, all the players you've played with, who would it be?
Oh. Hmm. It's gonna because I can still see I'm still seeing feeling goosebumps is when I kicked for Chris Hicks against Leeds and he scored at Wembley. But
did Hicksie have any AFL background? Had he played any AFL growing up as a lad?
I'm not sure. I don't think so. Not sure.
I mean, Matty King may have done a little bit of it.
It was Matt. So my toss-up would be between Matt and Joel Monaghan.
Not Matty Russell. Not Matty Russell.
It's on off. And I can't split them. I'd back my house on both of them and get. Do you know what I'd love to do? To kick it while they both contested it. One defended, one attacked.
That'd be good, wouldn't it?
On the kicking front, then, I've always wanted to ask this question. But as a kicker, what are your... Take us through, step by step, what you're thinking about when you go to place that ball and you're kicking. So did you have a routine or a mental sort of little play before you actually kicked a ball?
Over the goal, over the post?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so, well, it was about 2006. Don't quote me on this. About 2006, Paul Cullen brought kicking coaching. I was always one of these natural kickers because I played soccer, just put the ball down, kick it.
Yeah.
Anyway, he brought this kicking coach in, and that was really good because I didn't kick for about 3 years afterwards because he messed with my head thinking about all this stuff and doing that. And but no, I was one of these who, you know, literally put the ball down, work out which way the wind was going and kick. And that was as simple as it gets. Sometimes you can overthink it, play a lot of golf, and the more you overthink it, the wider it goes.
Why have you gone to artificial grass in your back garden?
There used to be a place in St. Helens called Fives Football. It was an indoor warehouse what had 12 indoor five-side pitches. Anyway, the guy who owned it, he sadly passed away. So him and his wife were an old couple. So she didn't want the bother about, you know, maintaining this. They turned it back into what it was previous, which was a depot for wagons to go and park. So she said to Thatcherweath Crusaders, my amateur club, do you want all this 3G pitch? Oh, yeah, we'll make some use of that. So this is where my back garden 3G comes from, was from there. So in one corner, I've got a penalty spot and a semicircle.
Have you distributed this out with the players? Because on Instagram, I have picked up that a lot of the players have also got artificial grass as well.
No, I don't distribute anything out with them lads. They're on enough money, so.
Fair enough.
Talking of that team then, it's won 3 Challenge Cups. It goes to 2 Super League finals and doesn't win. I've got to ask the question, why?
Oh, there's a lot of reasons why. There's a lot of reasons why I could say it was. But, you know, I'm not a bitter person and I don't look back with regrets. At the end of the day, we weren't good enough. We weren't good enough. We could play, you know, against Wigan. We had injuries at vital times. But, you know, so what? We should. A champion team overcomes that and takes it out. But we just wasn't good enough. All the
not
stars.
Guilty of playing the occasion, Lee?
You know, quite possibly. But no, because we, you know, against Wigan, we went to a 16-4 lead, so we weren't thinking about the occasion. And we got Joel got injured, Steph got injured. I had to go to fullback. You've got to
you
win
see?
Anything.
Steve Anderson knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
Getting you prepared 10 years later.
Let me tell you, when they were kicking it, when Wigan were kicking it long, I have never prayed for the ball to go into touch for as long as I can remember, because I would have taken that ball back into 13 of them. But you know, the stars have got a line. All stars have got a line. Unfortunately, they've not lined yet for us. But guess what? They will do. They will do. And it'll be, God, it'd be worth it. All that heartache. It'll be worth it.
Well, going on to that then, so Steve Price has been to two finals. He's won the Challenge Cup final in that same pattern as Tony Smith. And again, you go to a final and have lost under Steve Price. Is there something you want to say to the players next time, Lee, when they get there? And of all these finals you've lost, is it a case of just breaking this sort of hoodoo that we've got around our neck at the moment?
Yeah, we've got to speak about it, haven't we? Because, you know, if we don't speak about it, it's just going to be there and it's going to linger. There's a reason why we've not won one yet. You know, I do believe once we get that one, let me just run you back over my career. We couldn't beat Saints. We could not beat Saints at Knowsley Road. We didn't beat Saints at Knowsley Road in my career. Couldn't beat them away. We beat them once and the floodgates opened.
Right.
You know, we went beat them at the end of my career. How weird. I'd never lost at Langtree Park. Couldn't win at Knowsley Road. Never lost at Langtree Park. Challenge Cups. We didn't win a Challenge Cup for 34 years. We win 3 in 4 years. We win 4 and 6, whatever it is. It's just that first one. And it's, yeah, you need, everything needs to align to win one. Because it's not down to a lack of hard work, let me tell you.
Most of the team that are there now are... Let's say next year when we've got hopefully got a full season again, if we go to a final then, a lot of the team won't have been in the previous matches.
Yeah.
So it's nothing to do with them, but is it making them able to cope with people like us asking the question time and time again, why have you not won one? Why have you not won one? Is it somehow arming them with the tools on the lead up to it and the continual questions?
Well, that would be one way of we need to look at as a coaching group, because you are dead right. This group of players have never, they've not lost one. It's the club. So we need to understand that. It's why we never been to a grand final won it. Well, actually, this group of players, there'll be a few in there, but this group of players or whatever that may be, you know, they the next grand final, they've never been to one and played together as a team. The club has. But so, you know, I absolutely hate It's Always Our Year. Hate it with a passion. I could absolutely smash whoever come up with that slogan in the face with me 7-iron.
Rob, how are you feeling about that?
Are you predicting the media, Lee? Because this seems to be a running theme now in sports psychology that you predict the media. You look at what that theme, the headline's going to be leading into a big game. And clearly, every time, that's what the media is going to be. On Twitter, it's going to be, it's our year, hashtag blah, blah. Do you look into that? Are you ahead of the game thinking, as we lead into that game, we need to predict what the headline's going to be on the Daily Mirror?
Well, you know, we're quite lucky in a sense that it's what other people say around social media. You know, players are on social media, so you probably said to them, you know, stay off social media for a week or two weeks. You don't need to read it. You know, it's siege mentality, basically, isn't it? It's us against the world. Nobody thought that we would have beat Saints at Wembley. It was siege mentality. You know, it was a group of players, group of coaches, group of admin staff coming together as one and, you know, giving it the best shot. Some days you could give it your best shot and not be good enough. That's fine. That's totally fine. But you've got to give yourself a best shot.
Yep. Well, moving away from psychology, and let's just look purely at the talent. We've got a very talented halfback pairing now in Blake Austin and Gareth Widdop. You must be around them a lot, Lee. Are they starting to gel? I mean, Gareth didn't really get that pre-season that we wanted him to. Have you noticed them starting to gel together?
Yeah. When they both got back to training, Gareth got injured within 2 weeks. So, we're now... It was coming together nicely. And was it perfect? No, but we didn't expect it to be yet. Slow and steady steps, and you know, coming to the back end of the season, you see, you know, you'll see the strength of those two guys. And yeah, it's an exciting partnership, and we as coaches need to make sure that we get the best out of them.
Is too much put on the word partnership? I mean, does 7-6 really have to be a partnership in the modern game?
It's not 7-6 where, you know, the scrum half and standoff. They're both the same players.
Yeah.
They play on different sides of the field. They can go anywhere they want. It's not like the old days.
Yeah.
Talking about your role, how is your role within the team now? Because, you know, you have a sense of humour. You are always seen as the rogue and things like that of the, you know, in the past and things. How does your role fit in now? How would you describe it?
Oh, well, you know, I'm obviously assistant coach and the attack coach, but I'm just there to support the head coach. You know, he's the boss. I support him in any way I can. I kind of being that link between head coach and player. You know, sometimes the player won't say to the head coach what he'll say to an assistant coach. Sometimes he won't say to an assistant coach what he'll say to an head coach. So you're kind of being that link and making sure that, you know, everything's right and everything's smooth going along. And, you know, I can be serious when I need to be.
From a humour point of view then, and not a fan of the broadcast, Adam Hills is a comedian. What sort of comedy characters do you like then, and what sort of makes you laugh?
Oh, you know, I can laugh at anything. As long as I'm one of these guys, is, you know, I don't take myself too seriously. But I make sure that I can laugh at myself. If you can't laugh at yourself, you shouldn't laugh at anybody else. And that's, I'm not into, you know, this gang mentality where you take the piss out of one person. Everybody takes the piss out of one person. I don't like that. But as far as comedy goes, and I can watch anything. You know, I'm a pretty chill guy.
This sort of, when you sort of jump out on people, you know, you seem to hide in a cupboard. Does this go back to your hide and seek at Knowsley Road, Lee? Is that where it's come from? Yeah.
And I think me and a child, innit? You know, me and a child. I'm still, when people say, oh, you're getting old and stuff, no, it's not. Numbers just, you know, it's just a number. But, and also, it keeps people on their toes, doesn't it?
Keep people on their toes. Yeah. Lee, you also played for Wales. That game against Australia, where you, I think you were leading 20-8. Mate, why didn't you park the bus? Is it impossible to park a bus against Australia? Come on, what, could you not have won that game?
Yeah, well, what a game that was. You know, it's crazy. And I suppose we've had a conversation today about the team being stronger than the individual. You know, we had some good players in that team, don't get me wrong, but the team was so strong in the way we were best mates off the field. For an international team to say they can be best mates off the field, let's not forget we play for opposite clubs. It was just fabulous. In that game against Australia, it gets lost, this, in translation, because we had John Devereux and Paul Moriarty to play for us. Because we only had 15 fit players. Paul Moriarty and John Devereux had not played rugby league for 3 years.
You're kidding. They've
not played 3 years. And they come and played in that game against the world champions in a semi-final for World Cup. And we turned that performance. It was just magical. You know, half time, we were in disbelief, you know, in the sheds at half time, because we were leading 22-8, was it, something like that? And we had a chance in the second half to go 28-8 up.
Yeah.
Justin Harris should have had Anthony Sullivan, but I think the fullback knocked it down. It was mental, absolutely mental.
Yeah, you kicked a drop goal. I think you were 20-8 up. Did you just run out of steam then? Because if you watch the whole game on YouTube, in that last 15 minutes, they sort of just get on a roll and keep scoring try after try. But for that 60 minutes, mate, you were there. Is it impossible to park a bus like football? Can you not do it in rugby league? Is there not a way around this?
We've done it many a times when we've been beaten Saints for 5 or 6 minutes to go, and we've parked the bus and start kicking ball out, and then they come back and score it last minute.
Yeah.
It's
hard. I'll bring that up.
Yeah, it's so no, we couldn't do it. I'm, you know, it was some effort, that. Just a shame the game didn't just go for 60 minutes. Eh?
Yeah. Best player you've ever played with, Lee, and the best player you've ever played against?
Oh, I've been blessed. I have been blessed. You know, Warrington, we've had some absolute superstars. Alan Langer, Andrew G, Tuara Nicol, Toy Love, Martin Gleeson, Andrew Johns, Matt King, Mike Monahan. You know, the list, Adrian Morley, the list goes on. I'm going to split it into, you know, the best player overall would definitely have to be Andrew Johns, for sure.
Yeah.
He was the best player. But for what I learned over a period of time, I would have to say Alan Langer.
Yeah.
Now, if Andrew Johns had probably played for a year or two with me, he'd be the number one.
Yeah. But Langer was a special player. He really was.
And I'm going to throw Adrian Morley in there as well.
One player you'd love to bring to the Halliwell Giants. If you had an open checkbook, you could bring any player into that Warrington side now. Who would it be?
It's a good question, this. Because we've got a really good, strong squad. I think we are lacking on another prop. So I'm going to choose Luke Thompson, actually.
So you pick an English lad. How do you think he'll go in the NRL? How do you think
he'll be sensational.
You reckon? You reckon he'll fit in and go well?
Yeah.
What would be the future for you, Lee? What do you see yourself in a few years' time? Where do you see yourself?
When I knew my career was coming to an end around 2013, when I knew I was going to go another year, then the injury happened. And so I really sat down and put a plan together. And the plan was, you know, it's a 10-year plan. And, you know, that 10th year I wanted to become a head coach. In that, obviously, I was going to take over the academy. The reserves were in then, so that wasn't part of the plan. But then they were, so I did a bit of reserve, so that was a bonus. And then be assistant coach for, you know, six, seven years. And, you know, I'm into my eighth year now, my eighth season of coaching. It's slightly changed the touch. You know, the end goal of being an head coach is, if I'm being brutally honest, at this moment in time, is not a passion of mine that I want to do. Mm. I don't want to become a head coach. Again, that might change, but that end goal is not to become an head coach. And I don't strive to be that yet. I don't want to be it. And I just want to be the best assistant coach I can be at the moment. I want to try and change the way we have our kids playing.
Well, just talking to the kids, got one question from a fan. This is one we're probably going to end on now, Lee, and that's from a young lad called Callum. He's a very keen Warrington fan, and he's keen to break into the Halliwell Jones.
Yeah, go to the bottom end corner. And the car park one, there's a wall that it's not too tall. Get over, and then you can, all of that pitch is yours. But do it when everybody's gone home, so about 6 o'clock at night.
Lee, it's been a pleasure listening to your stories on playing and coaching. We wish you all the best during these trying times for the country. And we also don't want to forget, it's carers like you with the intent on making these times, you know, that are worrying for people a little bit better. So thank you for that as well. And once Super League is back, Lee, please, please, win us a title.
Thanks for having us on, guys, and I'll certainly try our best.